Hello, world. This is Future Podcast that's made in Finland but concerns everybody on this planet, since all of us ought to have a future. And that's what this episode of the Future Podcast is about. We're trying to find answers to the urgent question on how to utilize and spread the best ideas and solutions to tackle climate change. Tackling climate change means that we need to make some radical changes to the way we live, to the way we travel, the way we eat, and to the way we do business. As we speak, we are living historical and decisive times when it comes to finding solutions through which to make this change happen. At the same time, we are also living a lot less important historical moment. For this is the first time this Future Podcast is made in English, as we usually go by our Finnish name, Tulevaisuus Podcast, and speak Finnish. This is a very small step for humankind, but a rather huge step for the Future Podcast. In any case, all you eager and impatient English-speaking Future Podcast fans out there, your wait has come to an end. On this episode, we'll talk about what's trade got to do with tackling climate change and whether crumbling world trade system is good news or bad news for the climate. First up on this podcast episode, I have Mr. Ernesto Hartikainen, a circular economy specialist from the Finnish future-oriented think tank Sitra. And a little later, I'll talk with Ms. Malina Sell from the Finnish Ministry for Foreign Affairs, who works on trade and sustainability. But first up, Ernesto, welcome to the Future Podcast.
Thank you, Jukka. First of all, I'm deeply honored. This is a historic moment for the podcast, and I feel humbled by being the first English speaker in here.
Great. <That's>, didn't expect that to come. As mentioned before, as we're recording this, we're living a rather historical week. Just a few days ago, the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, published its updated climate report, which, to put it short, said we need to do more and we need to do it faster than previously expected. And at least here in Finland, the report got a lot of coverage and raised a lot of public debate. And for me personally, this was a bit surprising since I thought that almost all of us already knew the main messages. But what kind of feelings and thoughts did you have on this report and the way it was received?
Of course, the content of the report itself is extremely alarming. Climate change is here. It's now. If we want to reach this 1.5 degree target of global warming, which will allow us to prevent the biggest catastrophes from global warming, we have to start decreasing our carbon emissions right now, because we're increasing the amount of greenhouse gases all the time globally at the moment. So it's a big shift. And we have a very short time, in just 12 years, by 2030, unless we change, we'll already have the carbon budget filled. So we'll already meet this 1.5 degrees of global warming.
Yeah, it feels like tomorrow, basically. That's exactly a really short time.
But on the other hand, I have to say, on the other hand, I was surprised in a positive way, the fact that the report gained so much attention in mainstream media, even by our highest politicians, really grabbed onto this topic. And it has been very widely covered in the Finnish societal discussion for the past few days. So that has been good. I think we're finally sort of comprehending the urgency and really understanding that we need to act now.
Circular economy is a pair of words that seem to come across quite often nowadays, at least here in Finland. You work on circular economy ideas and try to promote this, way to do business, basically, or maybe a whole economical paradigm shift. Mm. How would you define circular economy in a nutshell?
I think the most important thing is that it's a change in mindset. We need to start to think about differently from our economy and even how normal people live day to day. So, for example, the concept of waste. We have to understand that waste is not good. It's bad. We have to think about how can we make business, how can we consume, how can we produce products in a way that does not create waste, and we utilize natural resources in a sustainable manner. So that's, I think, is a key aspect of it. Of course, businesses themselves think about how they can create more value out of the materials, the resources that they use. So it's also an economic opportunity for businesses.
So is this just a Finnish thing, or do we talk about the way we can actually change how the global economy works?
Yeah, of course, it's not only a Finnish thing. We live in a global economy nowadays, so products are produced in one country and they travel to another. And really to meet the challenges of climate change, for example, which is a result of the way we produce and consume products, we really need to shift our global economy, not just the singular country. So circular economy needs to happen everywhere, not just in Finland. We have, of course, leading countries, pioneering countries that are taking this concept forward, but this needs to happen everywhere.
So what stage are we at developing the concept and idea of circular economy? Is it more like a fancy plan on PowerPoints, or is it actually already happening somewhere?
Yeah, it's happening, of course. Not in the size that we need it to happen. But of course, we have great cases of businesses, for example, that sell circular economy products and services. We at Sitra, for example, we've listed 100 Finnish companies that are implementing the circular economy. They have some sort of circular economy business model. Those are listed on our site. I think, for example, in Helsinki, I mean, we have City Bikes. So City Bikes is a good example of how we share bicycles. Nobody owns those bicycles. We just pay for utilizing them. They're repaired, so they're utilized over and over again. But then we have private companies such as Maas Global, so they sell mobility as a service. There, once again, we don't need to own a car, but rather how do we combine different transportation models to move?
So it's kind of like a change in our mindset, and it's already happening. We see examples of it in our everyday life, but maybe we don't necessarily think that this is circular economy.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, it's the individuals that need to change, or everyone needs to change their mindset. But of course, we need our governments also to support this through regulation that supports this shift. And we need businesses to innovate, to come up with new solutions, new technologies, and new ways to offer whatever they want to sell.
Still, as you mentioned before, this can't be just a Finnish thing. This can't happen just in Finland. What kind of ways there are to scale up these solutions that we already have so that we could really have a global impact?
Well, of course, any type of business, what do they need for scaling up? They need financing. So we need to think about how do we invest into these new companies. We need the societal structures that support this. So, for example, and in relation to climate change, we need to have a real price for carbon emissions. Without that, it's just not economically viable, a lot of these solutions. We don't have the right price for carbon at the moment. We're not pricing the negative effects of our overconsumption and consumption of fossil fuels. So that's one. And of course, we need to share these ideas. And that, for example, our World Circular Economy Forum, which we launched last year in Helsinki, in Finland, with our ministries and several international organizations. That's one way of really sharing our knowledge of these best circular economy solutions so that they can be implemented elsewhere as well.
Have you noticed any cultural differences in how different people react to climate change, or how do they catch on to circular economy?
Yeah, of course there are differences, both cultural and the fact that countries are in different development phases. In Europe, for example, I think called circular economy, we really need to think about our sort of overconsumption of natural resources? How can we create well-being? How can we create economic development with less natural resources? But if we go to developing countries, in Africa, for example, I mean, their concern really is about how do they create cleaner environments, how do they create jobs, because they need economic development there just to have better living standards and so forth. So the contexts are different. We need to take this into account, of course, when think about circular economy. But I mean, I think circular economy as a concept is very well accepted throughout the world. I mean, I haven't run into any country that has a sort of a very negative thinking. I mean, this mindset, once we start to think about it, it's quite logical. I mean, it's in the end, the mindset is easy, but then now we need the solutions.
Yes, and cooperation throughout the globe to make it happen.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, thank you, Ernest.
Thank you, Jukka.
As said before, on this episode of the Future Podcast, we are talking with Ms. Malena Sell from the Finnish Ministry for Foreign Affairs, and we're trying to find the answer to the question on how the future of the world trade is connected to finding solutions to tackle climate change. Welcome to the Future Podcast, Malena.
Thank you very much, Jukka. It's a pleasure to be here. And indeed, I'm from the Ministry for Foreign Affairs, but I'll be speaking slightly more in my personal capacity today, if that's okay.
That's very much okay. Before joining the Ministry for Foreign Affairs, you worked at International Center for Trade and Sustainable Development for over 10 years, and you've also worked at the World Bank and the International Institute for Sustainable Development. To sum up this introduction, you have a lot of experience and insights on both trade and sustainability, which means that you are to be the right person to answer this. Should we be worried, as it seems that the very foundations of global cooperation and multilateralism are being questioned and even outright attacked, at the same time as we need global cooperation more than ever to fight the climate change?
Unfortunately, I think we should be worried. I'm worried. And I think for a small country like Finland that's very open, this is a situation we haven't seen really for a very long time. The foundation that we're really looking to strengthen at all times and now seems to be crumbling is that of an international rules-based system. So now we're seeing trade wars on the one hand, and then we're also seeing quite some significant backtracking on the Paris Agreement on the other hand. And we need both of these systems to move towards a sustainable future. Of course, globalization is a fact. We're very deeply integrated. Our supply chains, our economies are very deeply integrated. So it's difficult to reverse this either, which means that even though the system right now is going through crises, it's not about to collapse.
Okay, that's good to hear. And we'll get back to that a bit later. Just a few weeks ago, you participated in a public forum in Geneva, organized by the World Trade Organization, which everyone's more or less looking at the moment, as we're wondering whether these foundations of the world trade are about to change. What were the talks and atmosphere like at this event, both on stage and behind the scenes?
This public forum takes place every year, and it's an opportunity for both trade policymakers and stakeholders from all different parts of society to come together and take stock of where we're at, but also to be innovative and think about the future, what could be done. And there was actually more participation than ever before. There were 2,500 people there, which was really quite a lot. Now, does that mean that people are flowing in to support an organization in crises?
Maybe we're just living so interesting times.
Exactly. There are probably many reasons for it, but definitely the people who were there are very supportive of the foundation and structures that the World Trade Organization stands for. Now, the themes were also very interesting, because the WTO is often criticized for difficulty the organization has in keeping up with times and changing times. And at this forum, the focus was very much on the future and on current trends. The official theme was Agenda 2030, so sustainable development in its different forms. And what was interesting was that there was also a special event organized by the WTO together with UN Environment, which really looked at how to make trade work for environment, prosperity, and resilience.
So was there some kind of an outcome, or what was the conclusion of the talks that took place there?
Unfortunately, this is more a forum for looking at potential solutions and bringing up important new ideas. So what we would need, of course, at some point when the time is right, is new negotiations based on all the new issues in the world.
When it comes to world trade and climate change, one kind of stupid but also quite profound question is whether growing world trade is something to aim for. After all, one could say that globalization and the rapid growth of world trade are amongst the main reasons why we buy and consume too much stuff. And this is also one of the main reasons we are experiencing this climate crisis in the first place. So in regard to sustainability, should we actually aim for more trade or less trade?
Well, in my opinion, it's not really about more or less trade as such. It's really about what kind of trade we have and what kind of production and consumption we have. It's about how we use our resources on this planet wisely and how we stay within planetary boundaries. And I think this is where circular economy comes into the picture. So it's about how we produce, consume, and trade. And we need to look at the full life cycle and the systemic level of this issue. So how do we design products so that they last, so that they're repairable, and so that they can become new raw materials at the end of their life? How can we really maximize energy and resources efficiency over the full economic system and really the globe, which much of it happens through trade? And we're not looking here only at climate benefits, but the benefits would also flow from biodiversity, our water footprint, for example, local air quality, etc. And part of the shift also involves moving more towards a sharing economy. We don't need to own everything anymore, which is kind of in sync with what we're seeing in terms of how trade is actually shifting. Especially in our country, we're moving more towards services trade rather than products in general. And digitalization, of course, brings big changes as well. So just to take, again, a step back to the individual and individual consumption. Now, with the IPCC report, the 1.5 degree report that was just released, there's been a lot of focus on personal choice, personal consumer choice, and lifestyles in the developed world, which, of course, you know, it makes a lot of sense. That's how it should be. And I think that we're taking a step back to question the paradigm of not just fast food, but also fast fashion, fast furniture. This is part of the debate, right? But then at the same time, we also need to remember that not the whole world looks like our country, so there is still a need for more consumption in other parts of the world and in the developing countries as well. But the question really is, you know, what kind of consumption is that? And in the media, we've also had a lot of voices saying, well, look, you know, here in the Nordic countries, we're all eating switching to plant-based diets and thinking about buying an electric car, and it doesn't have it doesn't make any difference because, you know, look at China and India. But I think that this is where we should look at how we can cooperate with China and India also around the circular economy, but because these two huge countries have started designing their own circular economy roadmaps, which is interesting and really something we should be engaging in at the same time and not use that as an excuse for us not to do anything. So trade as such, as I see, it doesn't have to work against circular economy principles at all. I guess the basis is that we need more sustainable technologies, more sustainable industrial systems, sustainable products, recycling innovations. And we need them at a global scale, and we need the best available solutions at the global scale. And here, the global trading system can help us align with our goals, creating efficiencies because of scale and market size, and just making sure that those new products are everywhere and where they need to be.
These goals and this transformation sounds really ambitious. Where do we go now with all this? Are there some concrete examples of what has actually been done already? Or is it just more like a planning phase?
Well, I think we have lots of examples, and we're piloting a lot of things here in Finland. One discussion that comes to my mind, which I think is quite interesting, is, you know, our most valuable resource really is forests, and it always has been. So the products we get from our forests are to a very, very high extent globally exported. Now, what is it that we want to export when we think about the longer future? Is it the forest resource as a resource, biodiversity, recreation, tourism, etc., that's going to be most valuable in the long run? Or is it bulk products, very basic bulk products? I don't think so. And of course, our forests are also carbon sinks, and there's been a lot of discussion of how much stuff can we take out of the forests. But whatever we do take out, and of course we will be taking out valuable raw materials from the forests, then of course those that are really at the cutting edge and highly refined, and I'm thinking of sort of forests turning into some kind of a protoplasm for biopharma or bioplastics, new materials, very interesting things you can do that have a very high value added. And that's probably more where our focus should be when we think about exports.
As I said, these goals sound rather ambitious. And I don't know about you, but for me, this transformation from our current rather wasteful and stupid economy to a smarter circular economy sounds like a pretty hard thing to do. Do you believe that this can actually be done?
I think that's a good question, because indeed we're talking about a major paradigm shift. So we have to move on a number of different fronts at the same time. And of course, it's a question of political will. But I think one of the key issues is that material and trade flows bind us together globally. And we need to understand how this works and how to optimize them better. And this is where the World Trade Organization and, for example, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, come into the picture. In an ideal world, I think we would have a global carbon price. And in general, we would be paying the full cost for polluting and the damaging side effects of resource use. And of course, this would also affect what we pay for transport related to global trade. One of the questions then is, you know, what can we in Finland do? And one of the issues is awareness raising. And this is why Finland, together with Costa Rica last week at the WTO, brought the discussion of circular economy to the WTO. And we did this for information sharing purposes more than anything else, so that after that we can think about steps forward. And of course, here in Finland, because we are the first country that created this roadmap for the circular economy, we have a lot of solutions that we're piloting here. We're finding what works, what doesn't work. Of course, not everything can be directly transferred to other situations and environments, but I think that this piloting is very important. And one of the things that we're really strong at is technology and technological solutions. And here, when we talk about trade and climate change, the focus is very much on the environmental footprint of our consumption here in Finland and how it spans the whole globe. But there is another side to this debate as well, which we could call the environmental handprint of our trade and our exports. And that has to do with the low carbon, energy efficient, material efficient technologies that have been created here, as well as pollution control. And the effect of exporting these to the world means that, of course, their impact on the global environment will be much higher than it would be if they were only used here in Finland. So I think that this is kind of the other part of how we can look at trade and sustainability and kind of a shift to circular economy.
So we shouldn't just concentrate on the question, why should we do something if those people aren't doing anything? We should ask ourselves, what can we do? How can we make this impact?
Absolutely, absolutely. Through dialogue, through our exports, through our, and of course also through our own consumption, we make personal choices.
You mentioned before that China and India have made their own roadmaps to circular economy, as has Finland. How can we make sure that these roadmaps play together in a way? Because we are talking about a global issue here. Is it something to hope for that every nation makes its own roadmap? Or how should this go, in your opinion?
This is something that I think we're only starting to discuss now, because even our roadmap is only 2 years old and all of the others have come after that. So this is the perfect time to start that dialogue. And part of, you know, how we can make these roadmaps work together is through trade, exactly. Some examples for what needs to happen in the trade realm that I could bring at this point. I guess they're a little bit technical and maybe not the most exciting, but I'll just mention a few things. So yeah. One of them is we've already in the trade realm had negotiations on an environmental goods agreement. And the idea behind this is that we need to get tariffs down on environmental technologies, products, and possibly in the future also services that are linked. The idea being that at least getting access to clean technologies, environmentally friendly technologies, should never be hindered by big tariffs that bring prices up. Right now, these negotiations are unfortunately on hold, but the EU, within our free trade agreements that are regional with other specific countries, we do include this element as well. And then we need definitions and rules around products and, for example, their safety. Right now, products can be recycled maybe on other sides of the border. So we need to share information and we need to develop joint standards. If we don't, it might become quite chaotic and we need to avoid technical barriers to trade that might give rise to. And of course, there's a big difference between developed and developing countries. Developing countries might also need support in order to get into new circular economy value chains and to find their own strengths within these global value chains. So there's definitely a call for technical cooperation here. And we already have a program on aid for trade. So that trade could be circular trade. Another kind of interesting thing that comes up in sort of the trade sphere is traceability. And, you know, how do we know the impact of value chains and the root source of different products and materials that go into the products that we make and consume? And I think that we're getting much better at knowing this, and digitalization is kind of at the cusp of a point where we will know so much more. And of course, this will be very much needed on the other side as well. So those products that we no longer use, are they being reused somewhere else? Are they being dismantled? And a good example of that is, you know, what happens to our cell phones when we don't use them anymore.
Yeah, I was just about to say that when most of us think about the world trade, we think about services or products that go from one place to another. But nowadays we have to think about, for example, waste, as we've seen in recent times with China's import bans on waste that have raised question and focused new kind of attention on trade rules that you just mentioned, that there's a lot of different pieces to this puzzle that we need to take into consideration nowadays.
Exactly. And I think that China's waste ban is very interesting. A case like this can trigger new innovation and new products, and kind of highlights the importance of business at the end of the day of finding these solutions. And I just wanted to highlight sort of the process of change by taking the example of Nestem. Because a number of years ago, when we started looking at what are sustainable fuels, really, the move into biofuels seemed very simple and straightforward. We just won't use fossil fuels anymore. We'll move to biofuels and we'll use palm, we'll use corn, we'll use sugar beet, whatever we have there that there's even, for the time being, overproduction of globally, and it'll take care of a lot of problems and be a silver bullet. And of course, it wasn't at all. And very soon, we started seeing the effects of palm oil plantation expansion and the problems around that. And Neste really started changing their business a lot, and many other companies as well. But you know, today, only 10% of the biofuels that they produced are actually palm-based. The rest is really waste. And there, circularity at a global scale is really becoming something very, very concrete, because you know they can use slaughterhouse waste from New Zealand or waste fats from somewhere in China. And there's kind of a flourishing market for secondary flows that then can be used, and of worse and worse quality, that can be used to produce sustainable biofuels. And when China put in place their import bans for waste, one of the things that meant was that Europe and the US, and especially New Zealand and Australia, really started overflowing with this plastic issue that, you know, that's everywhere. And very recently, Neste will also start producing, I guess that's kind of secondary fossil fuels or something, from plastic. But again, you know, the solutions will come. We need to do something to turn more circular.
One opportunity to kind of boost this cooperation and new partnerships is the World Circular Economy Forum in Yokohama, Japan. That's one thing that comes from Finland, and that also Sitra, the Finnish think tank, has been developing and promoting. How do you see this kind of new forums as a tool to make the world come a little bit more together?
I think it's really useful, and it's useful in that it brings together not only people from different parts of the world, but also people from different sectors, and a lot of private sector interest, from big companies to small startups that also need to work together in order to really operationalize these new solutions. And this next forum in Yokohama will also include a session on trade that will be hosted by the OECD, and they'll be presenting some interesting work on exactly how they are modeling natural resources flow and trade flows across the world, and they're modeling how circular economy solutions can change and have an impact on those flows. So I think these sort of discussions need to continue at all levels, and this forum is unique.
Now I think it's time for the tin foil hat segment of this podcast. In this part of the show, we're putting on mental tin foil hats for a while and talk about some conspiracy theory, rumor, or a real threat regarding the episode's topic. This time I wanted to highlight a warning that was made by Mr. Stephen Woolcock some time ago in Helsingin Sanomat newspaper. He's an associate professor at the London School of Economics, and he said that the fall of world trade could have dramatic consequences, as did the Great Depression in the 1930s, with the rise of nationalism that finally led to the Second World War. In your opinion, are we facing a risk of something similar if the international trade system somehow collapses nowadays?
Well, a couple of different points come to my mind here. The first thing I'm thinking here is, you know, the age of extremes, as the 30s have been called. And if we look at the 30s and we look at our time, certainly there are some similarities there. And one of the extremes is that inequality really is growing, both in terms of wealth and because of wealth also in power. This is one of the things that does kind of take us back to trade again, because trade is a really easy scapegoat for other problems. You know, like automation is a big factor to why jobs have left many developed countries. You know, if you don't want to talk about the fact that you lack safety nets and you're not providing retraining programs for your workers, of course, it's easy to point your finger somewhere else and say, look, it's them out there. We build a wall. We, you know, it's trade. Trade is the problem here. They're the bad guys. And that's why we're having these problems at home. You know, it's easy to build populistic arguments based on trade. But protectionism is never a good solution for anyone. That's the problem here. It actually makes everyone worse off. And so it can become a really an escalating vicious cycle. And that's where the real risk is. Because, of course, if things are not getting better, they're actually getting worse, then you need to point even more fingers in convenient directions. And since protectionism and tariffs actually leads to big problems, you might have that kind of escalate out of control.
Can we see that kind of a vicious cycle somewhere in the near future? What's your analysis?
Well, I guess we just have to wait and see. Lagarde just basically said during the IMF annual meetings that, yes, we're seeing a risk here. We're seeing a risk of the whole global economy slowing down of these trade wars. Of course, you know, what the percentages will be and who will be hit in what way remains to be seen. And, you know, how far will this go? But I think that the other thing that you know, this tinfoil question brings to mind is just that the situation, on the other hand, is very, very different now compared to what it was like in the 1930s, because we are so strongly linked globally through all areas of technological development. And last week, Jack Ma, who's one of the co-founders of Alibaba, he had this point about how, to him, at this time, really the digital solutions that we have and sort of digital trade, what it means is that we're personally connected to each other at all parts of the world. So a Chinese consumer can buy coffee directly from a Peruvian farmer. And this can actually, and hopefully, bring a real sense of connection, and also a real connection that protects us against the extremes that I was just talking about.
The final question. In your opinion, what should we do today in order to have a better tomorrow and future when it comes to sustainable economy and well-being?
Well, I guess this is where I have the right to take out a magic wand and hope for a big change.
So, yes, please.
You know, well, as a mother of two relatively young children, I really think that it's also what we need is a change in ethics. And it comes through education. It comes through what we aspire to. It comes through what kind of a world we want to live in. And, you know, what kind of growth do we really want? What kind of growth do our children want? Because I think that human being will always want growth. But is it material growth? Or is it growth in terms of wisdom, spirituality, all these other dimensions that, you know, are what really make us human beings. So that's my hope for a better tomorrow and future.
Okay, thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Future Podcast. That's made by Finnish future-oriented think tank, Sitra. In our previous Finnish-speaking episodes, we've talked about artificial intelligence, world peace, and about what the world would look like after Facebook. You can find the previous episodes in Finnish on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as from Sitra's website from the address sitra.fi/podcast.